It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning again, everyone. So who cares if the New York City suburbs shrivel up and die? Not the kids who grew up there, apparently. We will look at a new Regional Plan Association report now on the decline of the suburbs in greater New York and ask our suburban callers and suburban born and bred callers, do you care? And should society care and take any public policy actions if cities are growing and suburbs are dying? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. And with me now to put meat on these bones, Juliet Michelson, Vice President for Strategy at the Regional Plan Association, the New York area think tank that specializes in the health of the overall region. Welcome to WNYC.
Thank you. Thanks for having me here.
What's this new report? And I realize it's about a lot more than the suburbs, but what did you find out about the suburbs?
So we found out a lot of very interesting things about the suburbs, a lot of things that we were not necessarily expecting. For one thing, just like you mentioned, there are a lot of young people who are not necessarily coming back to where they grew up. So they grew up on Long Island, for example, went to college elsewhere, and are choosing not to come back. In the case of Long Island and in the case of a lot of other places, it's in large part because they are not finding the type of housing options that they're looking for. So a lot of young adults today prefer to live in apartments. They need rental housing. They like to live in urban communities, walkable communities. And Long Island just has very few of those places.
Now, convince me that there's something really new happening here, because there's already a classic pattern of you grow up in the burbs, you move to Manhattan for the excitement when you're a single young adult. Then, you know, you move to Park Slope when you have your first kid, and then you move to Montclair when you have your second kid.
That's right.
If you have the money to do that.
Okay, so I guess what we're saying is that these trends are accelerating. We've looked at, and not just demographics, but on job numbers, the number of jobs that have been created in New York City since 1990, in the last 10 years has gone up by 12%. In the suburbs, the number of jobs has actually decreased by 1%. So all of these populations, the young adults who are choosing to have their kids even later, I think, than they did 10 or 20 years ago, who are not worried about schools yet, who are not worried about having a lawn for their kids to play on, are choosing to spend longer and longer in Manhattan, and that pressure on for development for urban communities in Manhattan is spreading to Hudson County, is spreading to Brooklyn and to Queens.
Hudson County is so interesting in this because that's where people are moving in addition to the five boroughs of New York. And Hudson County, for people who don't know the counties of New Jersey, it's Jersey City, Hoboken, Bayonne, Union City, Secaucus, Weehawken, all
right.
That around there. It's one of the most densely populated counties in the United States. It's not a suburb of New York. It's an urban, it's part of the urban area that's adjacent to New York, and it's gaining young adult population.
Oh, that's right. That's right. And, you know, a lot of them do work in the city. I mean, the PATH system ridership has skyrocketed in the last 20 years.
And is it different suburban county by suburban county in our area? You mentioned Long Island, Westchester compared to Nassau, different. Bergen compared to Westchester and Nassau, different. Did you look that closely?
Yeah. The rate of multifamily units that are getting built, in other words, apartment units that are getting built in Westchester County and in New Jersey is much, much higher than on Long Island. And so I do think that the trends on Long Island are more pronounced than they are north and west of the city.
Why?
I think culturally there's just sort of been a resistance to change out there. There's this, historic post-World War II culture of having the value of single-family homes on a half-acre lot, and there's just more resistance to change on that front.
It's interesting. You know, Thomas Suozzi, the former Nassau County executive, used to talk about this on this show and elsewhere, and I could hardly believe it, where given the culture out there, he would call for more density in housing, especially apartment units around Long Island Railroad stations, to create exactly this kind of relatively affordable housing in Nassau County that would keep more young people in there. But people politically were allergic to it in Nassau County. They saw it as poor people, they saw it as crime. They saw it as a kind of diversity that it was unwanted. And it was one of the reasons he got defeated for re-election.
Mm-hmm. That's right. And ridership on Long Island Railroad has been very stable compared to New Jersey Transit and Metro North that have seen their ridership grow tremendously.
Though there was also a New York Times article on a related theme a few weeks ago, and they cited a few Long Island localities, Long Beach and Westbury and Rockville Center, as examples of municipalities that are succeeding in drawing young people with apartments and job-rich office buildings and downtowns and things like that.
And I do hope that those trends continue. I think that it is possible that, you know, now that the people who – I think more and more people are realizing that the folks who are not able to move to Long Island because there are no starter apartments are not just immigrants and – people who, you know, can't afford to live in the large houses. Sometimes, more and more often, it's literally the kids of the people who chose to move to Long Island after World War II.
212-433-WNYC. Who cares if the suburbs shrivel up and die? Do you? What should be done about it? 212-433-9692. This is WNYC FM HD and AM New York, WNJT FM 88.1 Trenton, WNJY 89.3 Netcong, WNJP 88.5 Sussex, and WNJO 90.3 Toms River, New York and New Jersey Public Radio. As we talk to our guest from the Regional Plan Association, which put out a big report on the decline of the suburbs locally, David in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Thanks for calling up.
Hey, Brian. So, you know, I grew up on Long Island in Huntington, and getting into Manhattan was always what I aspired to because I spent my summers working on Fire Island, and all of my friends were from Manhattan. So when I came back to New York after college, I moved into Manhattan, lived on a boat for a while, but always thought we'd be heading to Westchester or Long Island when our kids came along, which they did, and were ready for school because we wouldn't be able to afford private school and we wouldn't be happy with the public school options. Well, P.S., the public school options were tremendous. Our kids went to our local public school in the neighborhood, went to the High School for American Studies for high school. My daughter's a junior. She's heading off to college soon. We were able to stay because of the schools, and I think that's a big factor for lots of people who move to the suburbs. And between the quality of the schools and the combination of apartments that's going on, New York City's an option for people who want it. But you have to know, a lot of my friends, when I was in high school, this was now 40 years ago, they had never been to Manhattan and had no interest in stepping foot to Manhattan. That will become the new population of Long Island.
David, thank you. Yes, that's it. That's a cultural divide, those who want to and those who are allergic to it. And he talks about how he was able to come and stay in Manhattan and use the good public schools for his kids. However, I would say that he's part of a relatively privileged few whose kids, you know, obviously did very well if they got into American studies and et cetera, et cetera. And not every family has that luxury, even as they may yearn, I don't know, for a lawn with trees, with a good public school system, but can't afford the housing stock that's out there.
You know, one thing that's interesting, we conducted focus groups this past winter to talk to people around the region about what they liked in their communities, what their needs were, what their desires were. And one thing we found, I mean, we found a lot of very interesting things, one of which is that it's very expensive to live here. And the other is that it's just very complicated to live here. And so it is possible to make it work, and I'm glad that David made it work. But I assume that it took a lot of trouble and a lot of complication to find an apartment in the right school zone, to then make sure that David's kids got into the right middle school and so on. And all of that just sort of harms quality of life of living here.
The school district is so central to this conversation.
It sure is.
I have a friend in Westchester who's selling a house, not going so well from what I hear. Reason, wrong school district. 2 miles down the road, similar house, very nice neighborhood. If you just drive down the block, you don't know any of this context. Better school district, different market.
That's right. And not to mention the fact that the quality of the school district affects property taxes and the value of homes and the finances of the municipality and the incentive that municipalities have to build more homes or more commercial space. I mean, in a sense, the quality of schools drives a lot of land use development region-wide. It really does.
Carol in Jackson Heights, you're on WNYC. Hi, Carol.
Hi, how are you?
Okay.
Oh, right. I grew up out in Roslyn and Old Westbury, went to excellent public schools. In fact, the high school is still one of the best in the country. I moved into the city as soon as I got out of college, just like a lot of other people over 50 years ago. And what I began to discover as I went through my life is that the life I'd had, while very nice and very privileged, was extremely provincial and insular. And I found that to be the case for a number of my – I'm still friendly with people I went to high school with. The ones who stayed on Long Island, who found businesses there and worked there, they're still, many of them, very provincial and very insular. And when my daughter got old enough from Jackson Heights to go to Stony Brook for 2 years, she found the same thing with her Long Island classmates. To me – part of the not wanting to go back is realizing that the world is not that segregated, isolated, insular Long Island.
Carol, thank you very much. Cultural divide between Carol and a lot of the people who she grew up with.
Yeah, and I'd say, you know, that is also an asset of New York City. I mean, as the world becomes more connected, as New York becomes, in a sense, more and more like London than it does a lot of American cities, and as people sort of travel more, right, and are exposed to more cultures, there's, I think, culturally also just a much bigger interest in living in a more urban, diverse area than many of our suburbs can afford.
Of course, I know Manhattanites who are pretty insular and provincial, just in a different way.
In a different way.
Lila in Inwood, I think, wants to continue this thread. Hi, Lila. You're on the air. Turn your radio off. We will come back to Lila. From an environmental standpoint, suburban living is less sustainable than urban living. From your group's standpoint, the Regional Plan Association, which looks at the overall economic and sustainability health of the region, you know, big picture, the greater New York area, as a regional planning think tank, do you care if the suburbs shrivel up? Does this make you alarmed at the RPA, you and your colleagues, and say, God, we got to do something to save the suburbs? Or maybe you say, okay, you know, if people are choosing more to live in the cities, that's their choice, A. And B, maybe it's better for the world anyway.
I mean, listen, there's no doubt that living in an urban area is much more sort of environmentally responsible than living in the suburbs. It's also much better for public health. People walk and bike here. People use transit. They use less carbon, less air pollution. Energy use per capita is about half in Manhattan as it is farther out. And, of course, interest in cities also reduces pressure on development on the outer edge. At the same time, though, I have to say, I mean, we are one economic system, and the livelihood, for the city to thrive, the suburbs also need to succeed, right? Many people in the region do want a house. They do want a lawn. And they should be able to have that and still be able to commute to a job in the city. And meanwhile, employers in the city need to have access to the very educated workforce that exists in the suburbs.
Aha, which is why you call, bottom line, for more affordable housing for families in the suburbs. Because if you think about it, the suburbs, I guess, would it be fair to say, is this a stretch to say the suburbs are Manhattanizing? That is, the quite well-off who can afford the big houses and the property taxes, they're going to live there. And lots of poor people who can't even afford to be poor in Manhattan, they're going to live and they're going to go to, you know, dense housing in some of the new poor concentrations in Nassau County and Westchester.
Or they're going to just move farther and farther and farther away from their job.
Yeah.
So that they have longer and longer commutes.
Right.
Their housing costs may go down, but their transportation costs may go up.
Which
they
is
add
already
to the traffic.
A problem in the last 10 years in New York. People with the same incomes who used to be able to live closer in to assuming a Manhattan job now have to live further out. Commuting times for the same incomes have increased.
That's right, which makes the economy less efficient, which means that, you know, if people drive, the air pollution gets worse and traffic gets worse, and not just for those people, but for everybody.
Now I think we have Lila in Inwood.
Yes,
hi, Lila.
I'm here.
Go ahead.
I grew up in Inwood.
Uh-huh.
And when I got married after the war, everybody was moving out into the suburbs. My mother said I had to move out there.
This was when Inwood was largely Irish and German-Jewish, would you say?
Yes, yes. And I moved out, could not stand it out there, couldn't wait to get back, moved up into the gardens. Brought my children up in Inwood. The children loved it, had a wonderful life. But I now see a lot of young people moving up here from downtown, but because they can't afford downtown, they can't afford Inwood, but they are also planning to buy a house eventually. That seems to be the dream of most people.
Lila, thank you very much. And, of course, Inwood, where I happen to live, then became very Dominican. Now there is definitely an influx of young, white, professional couples with small children to that neighborhood for a whole variety of reasons. So Inwood is always, to me, a fascinating example of constant population change in the New York metro area. But Becca in Nassau County, you're on WNYC. Hi, Becca.
Hi. I was just calling in to say I'm one of the young people that lives in Nassau County, but it's because I had to move home for economic reasons after college,
The living with your parents unemployed?
Yeah, which is really common for people my age.
Yeah.
A lot of my peers are in the same situation.
How many internships are you applying for right now, unpaid internships?
I'm just trying to go back to school at this point. I don't know where the money's coming from for it. But what I've noticed, because there's so many other young people that live in Nassau County now, is that the businesses are starting to change very slowly, because it is Nassau County and change can only come at a snail's pace. But I've noticed more businesses that cater to my demographic rather than my parents.
Uh-huh.
It's been an interesting change, but when I eventually am able to move out, I'm not going to be able to stay in Nassau County, even if I wanted to, which I don't, because it is very stodgy. But I won't be able to stay in Nassau County because it's not at all affordable. I was living in Suffolk briefly when I had a job and could barely afford to stay in Ronkonkoma, which is not even a really fun place to live for a 22-year-old.
So. Yeah, it's cheaper because it's so much further out.
Yeah. But it wasn't even that much cheaper, and I'd rather spend money to live in somewhere like Brooklyn or Queens where I can walk places and there's businesses that I can enjoy and stuff like that.
So does something tug at your heartstrings and say, save Long Island for me and my peers?
Not at all. I'm really only home because I had to be. There's no... People are so, so set in their ways here, and it's the county is going to suffer because of it, because they refuse to build multifamily housing in a lot of these towns, because they refuse to build businesses that are new and different.
You know, I will say, as we've talked to people, all of these issues of community and sense of belonging to community are so important to people's happiness. I mean, it's one thing to have trouble paying rent, and it's one thing to have trouble finding the right job or have trouble reaching even a good school. But the sense of belonging to a community is just sort of a very fundamental human experience, and it's one that we are trying to, you know, we're doing this study as part of a larger effort, right? So Once a Generation, Regional Plan Association has been around since the 1920s. And Once a Generation, we take stock of the region, we take a step back, look at a number of different trends, and understand what is the direction that the region is headed in, and what are the specific needs in terms of policies or projects. What do we need to invest in for the region to succeed? So only once we've identified the challenges can we then propose things to look forward to.
So you made proposals for the inner suburbs?
So we are not there yet. So this report that we published last week is just the first step, right? This is sort of our broad survey of how the region is doing. But one of the things that will definitely need to be addressed is this issue of people needing to feel a sense of ownership over their community and comfort with their community. And how can we change public policies about affordable housing or specific project investments about transportation, for example, in order to make people feel more comfortable about where they live.
Let's get a Brooklyn view of this. Twain in Prospect Heights. You're on WNYC. Hi.
Hi. How are you doing, Brian? Great show. I love you. Listen to you every morning.
Thanks.
So I think the shift from the suburbs is great from a sustainability standpoint. But it becomes also problematic because I think it's one of the drivers of gentrification. As an African American, I see this huge influx of people in the neighborhood, and you know, Prospect Heights, Crown Heights, Bed-Stuy was always where, you know, Caribbeans and African Americans could afford. Because they, you know, one, there was always this idea that they weren't really wanted out in Nassau and Suffolk. So you settled in Brooklyn, and now the character of the neighborhood is just completely shifting.
That's so interesting. So, yeah, and I get your point. So is this helping to drive gentrification in places like Prospect Heights? The fact that the young white professionals don't want to live in Nassau and Westchester and Bergen the way they once did, and so they're coming to Prospect Heights and et cetera, et cetera.
Sure. Or they're not leaving the New York region entirely. They're choosing to make a life here, and they're choosing to make a life in the urban area. Absolutely. Prices have gone up tremendously in inner Brooklyn and even in inner Queens and obviously in Manhattan. And we've looked at migration data for African Americans, and they are absolutely, you're correct, leaving Manhattan and Brooklyn in droves, and interestingly moving to the farther suburbs of the region or out of the region entirely.
So this reminds me of a line that I made a note of from your report, and I'm going to read it verbatim. Without more suburban housing priced for different income levels, cities will bear a heavy burden of meeting the region's affordable housing needs. That was an interesting line to me when you put it that way, that unless the suburbs do this, then cities will bear a heavy burden of meeting the region's affordable housing needs. Do you mean the suburbs have to do their share on affordable housing so the city isn't overburdened?
The city already has a very large majority of the affordable housing units in the country, in the region, I'm sorry. And that threatens to increase as the need for more affordable housing grows and the supply doesn't really. So, yes, one thing that we'll be looking at certainly is the need to mandate more affordable housing in the suburbs.
And this is an issue in the Westchester County executive's race. I don't know if you want to get electoral politically, but or politically electoral, but the incumbent Republican is being criticized by the Democrat for resisting more apartment buildings and more affordable housing in general. Can you do political analysis on each side's fault lines here, or don't you want to go there?
I don't think I'll go there. I'll just say that, you know, this is an issue that's hot everywhere. Just on Long Island, it seems to be really a third rail.
And that's on Long Island, also in Westchester, where the county executive, I saw him on TV just over the weekend, Rob Astorino, defending his policies with respect particularly to where affordable housing should be allowed in Westchester and how much should be allowed. And he said, no, we should not put dense apartment buildings in the same neighborhoods as single-family homes. And so this is an issue in his reelection.
Yeah, I do hope that that conversation changes.
Forgive me, I want to correct myself. He was reelected last year. He's the likely Republican nominee for governor against Andrew Cuomo.
That's right.
And that's one of the issues about him.
I was just going to say, I hope that the conversation changes because, you know, affordable housing is really no longer about immigrants. I mean, there are an awful lot of people today who need affordable housing, or housing that is affordable, whether it is publicly subsidized or not. The number of people who spend more than 35% of their income on housing has grown by 20% in the last 20 years. And after you've paid for your housing costs and your taxes and property taxes and your transportation costs, that leaves very little for things like healthcare and education, college, retirement.
And we're almost out of time, but it looks like Daniel in Port Washington calling in is trying to do something about this in Nassau County. Hi, Daniel.
Good morning, Brian. Thank you for taking the call. My organization and several other organizations in Nassau County are trying to pick up on the theme that Tom Suozzi used to be a proponent of, or still is a proponent of, which is that a certain amount of density is required for sustainable downtowns on Long Island, so that you may not ever have or want the density of a Queens or of a Brooklyn, but you do need to have a certain number of people mm-hmm. on a main street so that you have restaurants, so that you have attractive bars, so that you have young people who can afford to live in places like Port Washington, because I would posit that really, this is really an accident of zoning. And after World War II, when a lot of Long Island grew up, they had single-family houses in one place, and they had almost no apartments anywhere else, whereas now people understand that mixed-use zoning, mixed-use housing really is a part of a main street. And if you're going to have a working main street, you do need to have some young people living in apartments above restaurants, stores.
Auburndale, Bayside, Little Neck, Great Neck, Manhasset, Plandome, and Port Washington, right?
You've been on the train line, I see.
and Port Washington could be a great place to live for many people, partly because it is the first stop on that LIRR line, and so you will always get a seat if you're commuting into the city. But, Daniel, what's the biggest obstacle to your vision?
Well, actually, one of your previous callers said so, which is that there's a lot of people who are very afraid of change. But I would suggest that change occurs anyway. And the only way that we as urban planners can really stay on top of change is to recognize it and to adapt to it. Because otherwise, if you're trying to freeze everything the way it was 20, 30, 40 years ago, that economic model doesn't work anymore.
Daniel, thank you for your call. I appreciate it. And you're going to get the last word as we thank our guest, Juliette Michelson, Vice President for Strategy at the Regional Plan Association, the think tank that looks toward the interests of the entire greater New York region. Where can people read the details for themselves?
Oh, well, we have a great new website. It's rpa.org/fourth-plan, or you can just go to rpa.org. It's right up there front and center. And there are a lot of fun dynamic maps that you can click on your home and see how many jobs you have available to you in a certain commute time, and a lot of other fun things.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, we'll give you some of the details of the indictment that was just released in the last few minutes of Congressman Michael Grimm of Brooklyn and Staten Island. And we'll talk to Bill Hammond from the Daily News, who wants to repeal New York's scaffold law. He says it would actually make construction sites safer. Stay with us.